Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Give it up for the teams, a bunch of badasses, if you know what I mean. They're coming out of the sky, out of the sea, and on land, gonna take it to the enemy. Make sure you get home, boys. They got your back, the pride of the fleets, the bright swinging frogmen of the UTT.
Hey folks, Commander Mark Devine here with the Unbeatable Mind podcast, coming at you from not so sunny San Diego, California. And if you're listening to this for the first time, I encourage you to go to sealfit.com and put your email into our little opt-in form there so we can keep you up to date on all the wickedly cool things that we do here to train physical and mental toughness. Today, I am super stoked to have a teammate named Derek Van Orden, senior chief, right, Derek?
That is correct. Retired.
Retired senior chief, retired after 26 years in the military. I imagine most of that with the SEALs, but we'll find out in a moment. And we'll thank him for his service, but retired in November of last year. So he's now back in the civilian world and running a farm in Wisconsin. And what we're going to talk about today is how to develop resilient boys and how to become a man. And interestingly enough, he has just penned a very cool book called The Book of Man, which I think is going to do amazingly well. So we're going to dig into that. We're going to talk about how to inspire and develop the younger generation and see what we can learn. And it's super cool to meet you, Derek. I don't think we our paths crossed, maybe at a CERDEX or something.
Most likely at a CERDEX, but
formally worked together. So right. Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you for yours. We're both veterans now, so we can celebrate on Veterans Day. That's kind of a big deal for me.
That is a big deal.
Yeah, I was happy about it.
We were just talking before the hand how interesting it is for us military guys to go from the rigid structure of the bureaucracy of the teams and all that energy. And all of a sudden, when you get out, you know, if you don't go back in as a contractor and you end up just basically going to a farm or let's say starting a business. And I imagine being an entrepreneur and a farmer are probably a lot more alike than most people would imagine, how different it can be and how both exasperating because you don't have that structure. No one's telling you what to do. You don't have anybody to salute, right? You don't even have a paycheck and how different that is. And what was a pretty interesting experience, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. Speaking to my friends that have retired before me, they said it's a bit of a letdown.
Right.
And it can be, but I think I'm a little bit unique as a SEAL in that I never considered myself or considered a SEAL the completeness of my being.
Right.
Meaning it was something that I did and I was incredibly proud and so lucky to be able to do that. It was just fantastic. But it didn't encapsulate everything that I am. I'm a man of faith and I'm a family guy. And don't get me wrong, I wasn't one of those frogmen that show up 8 to 4.
Right.
I was 0630 to 2200 at night every day. Right. I was there. I mean, I spent over 16 years away out of 20 years as a SEAL on purpose.
Right.
But at the same time, just because you're physically somewhere doesn't mean that has to be all that you are. I think that the human mind and the human body are so much more capable than we give ourselves credit for. And I was able to, throughout the years, really, I wouldn't say compartmentalize specifically what I was doing at a certain time. But I was able to, I think, enjoy life a lot more than other folks were by maybe taking a minute, just a little pause to see where I'm at and where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
So it was very helpful to me.
Good for you. No, that's terrific.
Right on. Yeah.
Very, very cool. Hey, So let's, since we have a bunch of folks listening who are really intrigued with the Unbeatable Mind philosophy, which you just actually teed up a great kind of segue.
Sure.
You know, the underpinning of the Unbeatable Mind philosophy is that we're capable of 20 times more than we think we are. Mm-hmm. And then essentially we get into how. Like, how do we unlock that potential? And we talk about developing ourselves in a whole or an integrated fashion along what I call the five mountains of physical, mental, emotional, intuitional, and spiritual strength. Mm-hmm. And to take deliberate control over those areas of our lives so as best we can, right? Those things that we can control, which is, you know, as you know, very little, but it's very powerful what we can control, right? And if you can control what you can control, then the rest of the world seems to line up to support you. Mm-hmm. At any rate, you know, with your experience as a Navy SEAL, what do you think was like the most important principle that guided your life that helped keep you balanced, sane, and thriving in that high-risk, high-pressure environment of the SEALs? I just threw you a fast pitch.
No, it's cool. Well, there's a couple things. The first thing is knowing that I can.
Right.
I can. That Nike thing, Just Do It, one of the most fantastic marketing things ever. Just do it, right? Just go do something. Right. But you're really not ever going to be able to just go do something until you realize that you can.
Good point.
And you cannot do anything until you get challenged to the point where you can't, and then you overcome the challenge. So, and I learned that in Buds when I finally figured out why I was actually there. Mm-hmm. And what it meant. We were doing a PT on the beach in fourth phase. Now it's called PTRR or something. Mm-hmm. It's a pre-training phase, and I'm explaining this for your listeners, not you, obviously. But we're standing on the beach in Coronado facing inward, and Instructor Brown was on the podium facing out to sea, and the storm happened in San Diego, Juneau's, and that frequent, huge lightning storm, and then it started to hail. So there's lightning and hail. We're on a beach. We're in shorts. And I did 2 years in the fleet working on a tugboat, which is one of the reasons that I was so motivated to graduate from Buds.
I bet.
I was not going back, pal. Was not going to happen. God bless the regular Navy, but it's not for me. So this hailstorm starts coming in. Instructor Brown is facing this way, and he goes, "And halt." And he stands at attention, and he runs into the compound. I'm like, oh, well, this dude's going to go in there and say, we've got to stop PTing because there's thunder, lightning, and hail, right? Well, he comes running out like 5 minutes later, and he's got a dive mask on. And so what he did was he went into the compound to get a dive mask because the hail was hitting him in the face and he couldn't see if we were doing the right exercises. And that was a light bulb that appeared above my head when I realized, okay, what we're going to do in Buds is what we say we're going to do. We're here to PT for an hour and a half, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to do anything it takes in order to accomplish that goal that we have set for ourselves. Uh-huh. So learning that early in Buds, I think I'm the only guy that got that lesson. You know what I mean? There's like 100 people, and right. Like 40 of them started to get it, 20 really have a grasp, 10. And then there's like two people that are like, oh my gosh, this has just changed my life. That changed my life at that moment.
Cool.
So that's what I took with me
right.
throughout the SEAL teams. And so that applies across the spectrum of your life. If you say you're going to do something, then you should do it. And that's one of the key underpinnings in my book, The Book of Man, A Navy SEAL's Guide to the Lost Art of Manhood. That was a shameless plug. that's one of the things. It's like, look, man, if you say you're going to take care of your family, take care of your family.
Right.
Don't if ands or buts it. If you say you're going to be a good citizen, be a good citizen. If you say you're not going to drink anymore or you're going to quit smoking or whatever it is, whatever that challenge is, if you say you're going to do it, then just do it. Back to the Nike thing.
Right. Well, absolutely. And if you make that commitment, you may not have the skills and the knowledge to do it, but you find a way or make a way to close the gap, and then you get it done. That's awesome.
Best way to do that is to find someone that has done it before. Walk those steps ahead of you. I know the programs that you run for guys are just phenomenal because you have this very diverse background, and you have accomplished so many things in your life. People can look at it and go, oh, wow, well, Mark did that, so why can't I? It's great. That's the essence of manhood is younger men learn from older men.
Right.
Older men have learned from guys that are probably dead right now. But passing on those lessons, that's how we better ourselves as a society, as individuals, as humans. I'm sitting in the Nykoumenos Library right now. There's 25,000 years worth of knowledge sitting 100 feet from me that people don't even look at anymore. Who goes to a library? I do.
Right.
Yeah. Ooh, how about that? Deep thoughts with frogmen. How funny is that?
That is kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're a strange breed.
Sure.
So how did you, you grew up in Minnesota, you told me. So right. talk to me about your early childhood. What was that like? What was your father like? And what inspired you to join the Navy? Was that to get the heck out of Minnesota?
Yeah, my parents were divorced before I remember them being married.
Okay.
So my dad really, if he lived around the end of the Civil War, he would have been known as a carpetbagger or a vagrant. I don't know. So, and I pay no homage to that cat at all. You can learn what to do by seeing what not to do. It's the negative influences. So that's, I would say that my father was an influence. My Uncle Bob, Gunnery Sergeant Robert F. Mulligan, retired, was really the male role model in my house. The other role model for a character or for character was my mother, Carol Van Orden, who just passed last month, kind of unexpectedly. Yeah, she's fantastic. So I write in my book that, you know, she's the best mom and dad that anyone could ever hope for. Mm. So there wasn't a whole lot of that typical strong male, you know, my father's this great guy. And I wanted to follow in his footsteps. As I said, I learned what not to do from him. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Oregon following my mother. She was a single working mom, worked her fingers to the bone for us to support us. Fantastic lesson. You don't have to have external genitalia to support a family. You don't. You know what I mean? It's not a qualifier, pal. It's just not. But I love that.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I went out, and no kidding, like a seriously bad movie, a friend and I, his name is Kurt, we got liquored up one night and said, hey, dude, let's join the Marine Corps. And I'm like, yeah, you know, we're the best Marines. Right, totally the best Marines when we were drunk. And then I woke up in the morning with a hangover, and I'm like, dude, I do not want to be a Marine. And he's like, I don't want to be a Marine either. And I said, let's go join the Navy. He's like, okay. So, no kidding, I got in the car, I drove, picked him up, we still have hangovers. This was 1988, remember, if you had a pulse, and you, I think that was it. If you had a pulse,
yeah,
you're good to go.
The only qualification required, right?
Reagan wanted a 600 ship Navy. You know what I mean? And you need deck apes like I was to be on those boats. I cleaned a lot of toilets and painted a lot of stuff.
Which How did helps you end out. Up on a tugboat? I mean, that's
because, all right, so, and I talk about this in the book. The intervening years between moving to Oregon from Wisconsin, I discovered marijuana, and I thought it was great. Best thing ever. Dropped out of high school when I was 16. I just got my undergraduate degree last year. I was 44. That's twice the age of the average person. But, yeah, so I dropped out of high school and smoking a lot of pot, and I went into the recruiter, and they ask you a bunch of questions. They're like, hey, have you ever used drugs? I said, yeah, I smoked marijuana. And, well, how many times? Like, I have no idea. And he's like, no, really, seriously. And he's like, I have no idea. And he goes like, 1 to 20. I'm like, look, dude, I have no idea. It's that many times. And he is sitting there and he goes, you do realize I'm writing this down? And I said, well, I assumed you are. You're sitting in front of me with a piece of paper and a pen in your hand. It was just a guess that you're going to write something down that use the tools you have in front of you. But so I told him about that. And they're like, look, you can join the Navy. But there's a couple things you're going to be able to choose from. Three, actually. One was seaman apprenticeship, airman apprenticeship, or fireman apprenticeship. So I chose seaman apprenticeship. Because
did you ask him what the three different things would be like? Or
yeah, they're like, this guy comes in, I kid you not, and he's a chief. Like, I retired as a senior chief. I think this guy's MacArthur. I didn't even realize MacArthur wasn't in the Navy, but he had all these medals and stuff, and he's in his dress blues, you know. And he's like, Derek, when I joined the Navy, I did the Seaman Apprenticeship Program. It gives you the ability to look at all these different rates, which for your listening audience, your jobs, all these different jobs in the Navy, and you get to pick the one. I'm like, well, that sounds good. And you're going to be above the engine room, which would be really hot. And I wasn't too interested in air stuff. So that's what I did. And the Gulf War broke out. And I, you know, joined the Navy, see the world. I was stationed 600 miles away from my house on shore duty at Concord Naval Weapons Station working on a tugboat. I kid you not, dude. Working on a boat that pulled out hundreds of thousands of pounds of ammunition. I mean, seriously, it's that we'd pulling off these AEs, the ammunition and oilers. So this is like a huge Molotov cocktail, and they think I'm still a doper. But, you know, again, I said I wouldn't do it, so I didn't. That's been 30 years now. But I just found that very strange. Like, I would say, like, hey, we could use you picking up the yard, or maybe you could mow the lawn, or a cook, for instance. I'd be fine with that. You know, you're gonna, anyway. So that's how I got in the Navy. I just randomly stationed a tugboat, didn't know anything about Buzz at all. And I don't know, was Randy done? Was he in your time?
What was the name? You're breaking up a little bit.
Done, Randy. Oh, sorry, Randy. Randy, he was at Team 5. You know the SEAL motivator program that they have now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so when I joined, this was my motivational thing, and this is how I found out about Buds. There's three guys that wanted to be SEALs that joined the Navy. They were in my hospital corpsman class. I wound up striking for corpsman from the Bosun's Mate. Still didn't know about SEALs. So they're like, yeah, hey, we're going to be SEALs. I'm like, what's that? And I go, well, you get guns, you get to run around, you're outside a lot. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'm doing that. And they're like, you can't go do that. Mind you, I was still smoking cigarettes. And, you know, out and about, I was on per diem from the fleet. So, like, it's an extra $20 a day or something. Like, tripled my paycheck as an E-nothing. So stoked. In San Diego. I'm like, yeah. But so this guy comes walking into the class, and he was completely squared away. My chiefs were very competent in the fleet, but they just weren't, like, squared away dudes, you know. Mm-hmm. And he comes walking, turns around, goes, my name is Chief Randy.
Right.
If you want to be a SEAL, come talk to me. If you don't, F you, you're probably going to quit anyway. And then he walked out.
Awesome.
That was it. And what's funny, man, after Hell Week, another reason I got to go to Buds, this is why upon reflection, I have a much more deep appreciation of the hand of God in my life. Right. Because the only reason I got to go to Buds is because the teams were so short on corpsmen. Hmm. And I was in corps school at the time. Mm-hmm. So we had 56 guys go. There was 56 corpsmen in class 184 when we started. 56 corpsmen out of 153 or whatever the crap. 12 of us graduated on time. But after Hell Week, some of the guys run over to see Randy. And he's parked in his car. And he's like, hey, congratulations, guys. You know. And then I walked up to him, and I shit you not. He goes like this. You made it through Hell Week? Yeah, thanks. So I knew I was just a number. You know what I mean? He's like, I got to get X amount of corpsmen. Yeah, we'll take that Van Orden screwball. No way he's going to make it, but I'm good to go. I can go get a beer now because I met my quota or something. It's crazy. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, Navy stories, dude. And then I went to SEAL Team 4. It was the last SEAL team that I was aware of. I was unaware of the whole universe of operations. So that was the last SEAL team that I was aware of that went to combat. Mm-hmm. So I decided that,
Phantom, that's right.
Yep. Yeah, and Patea Airfield. And I said, if I'm going to be a SEAL, that's what I'm going to go do because that's what we're here to do. It wasn't a canoe club for me. I was married at the time. We had one child. And it didn't matter. I mean, I was going to go be the best SEAL I could possibly be. And mm-hmm. I would train constantly. And a few questions I asked myself, the two most important questions, you can apply these across the board. It's not necessarily for the SEAL teams, but number one, what did you do today to make yourself a better SEAL? Mm-hmm. So you can say you were a CPA for a while, right? Mm-hmm. You can say, well, what did you do to make yourself a better accountant today? Mm-hmm. And if you can't think of anything, sit back down.
Fail.
Right. Yeah, sit back down at your desk. And the other thing was, what have you done for America today?
I like that.
Yeah, and those things should be the same. Mm-hmm. What you're doing for your job and your life in the military, because your job really is your life, mm-hmm. it has to run parallel with the higher and greater truth. Mm-hmm. It must. And if you want to take it down to one more base level, what have you done? Not that accountants are bad. What have you done to be a better accountant today? Mm-hmm. What have you done to make your company better today? Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. That's interesting. I ask those questions of my staff, and I have them reflect upon how they can align closer every day with their unique passion and purpose, and then how they can translate that into making the company better and our clients' lives, better. It's pretty, yeah. But you're right. I've often said that the quality of your life is reflected in the quality of the questions that you ask yourself. It mm-hmm. sounds like you learned that early on. And was it a mentor?
Intuitive?
Yeah.
I've just always... My family makes fun of me because when I was a kid, like a small child, I used to stop and just watch ants for a long time. And I'm serious.
You can learn a lot from an anthill.
You can. Oh, my gosh. So many things. What are they doing? If you look at them, there are actually very subtle differences between them, but they all are going to go do a common thing, working together cohesively. And that's a joke for me with SEALs that you can – if you see four guys in the distance that look completely different, so they have different uniforms, different guns, different whatever the heck, but they're doing exactly the same thing, there is a very high likelihood they're SEALs.
Totally.
But to your point, you can ask these questions or have your people that have seen this a lot. Just like read a book on leadership, and they're all, you know, leadering themselves in circles. If you ask the question, but then don't listen and act on the answer that your people give you, stop asking the question, because you're going to get them pissed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? People know when you're actually listening to them, by nodding your head. That's write that one down. Put that in one of your leadership.
Yeah, that's
notes.
Good. I've got it logged. So, you served at SEAL Team 4 for how long?
I was there for 5 years.
5 years.
And then I went and finished independent duty school.
Okay.
So I was an 18 Delta, fully qualified.
Right.
Army Special Forces Medical Sergeant.
Goat Lab.
Yeah, I did that. Then I went to SEAL Team 1. And the reason being, I had the SEAL detailers, a friend of mine, his name is Tom, kind of had this plan laid out for me and a few of our guys to finish 18 Delta and then go back to the East Coast to screen for another team and then wind up there. That was kind of our path. Mm-hmm. And it's good when you have guys that want to lay that. By that time, I had proven that I wasn't a Slipknot. And however, the 5 years that I was at Team 4, I probably spent conservatively 4 of those years away from home, maybe 4.5. But, you know, you're a young man. You're an apprentice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you're really, at the end of 5 years, you're just breaking into journeyman.
Right.
That's 2 platoons. And I took that very seriously. Mm-hmm. So by that time, we had 3 children.
Mm.
And my wife, Sarah, who's the bomb, is from San Diego, Mission Hills native,
okay.
4th generation San Diegan and Caucasian. That doesn't happen very often.
Wow, no.
Yeah. But so I felt really bad leaving her at home. And this was in 1998. So leaving her in Virginia Beach, I felt bad. She didn't have family there. I mean, she had friends, obviously. She's not agoraphobic or anything. But so when we went to the detailing thing, Tom came up from Memphis and said, "Hey, dude, what team do you want to go to?" Or just say East Coast, West Coast. And he's going through everybody, East Coast. And he gets to me and I say West Coast. And he stops because he had already written down East Coast on his thing because I was one of his guys. You know, you're going to raise up to go to go screen. And he got so pissed that I filled out my it's a 1306/7 enlisted transfer request form. I still remember that. Hopefully in like 5 years, I'll forget what that form was. But so I put in SEAL Team 5, SEAL Team 1, and SEAL Team 3 because SEAL Team 1 was the SEAL Team 2 of the West Coast, you know, Stalag 1, right?
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, I want, because I came from SEAL Team 4, which was the SEAL Team 5 of the East Coast, you know what I mean? And so he got so pissed at me, he sent me to Team 1. And it was completely in his power. It wasn't like, oh, someone made me do this. I knew exactly when I got the order. So I'm like, wow, Tom is really pissed at me. were you at Team 1 before?
I was at Team 3.
Okay, right.
And then SDV Team 1.
Okay, so you should just chuckle at the guys at Team 1, right?
Yeah, yeah. They were
so did I until I went up there, and then I'm like, this is no longer funny.
Well, it's like Master Chief Facherty kind of.
That's right.
He was the cultural backbone of that team for many years.
He was there when I showed up.
Was he?
Dude, I got yelled at every single day because I'd have like, we're going to go PT. So I put on whatever boots I wanted or shorts and then socks and shit. And excuse me for swearing. But Dean Cummings, he's a friend of mine now, you know what I mean? But he was the Master Chief and he was doing what he's doing as the Master Chief. That's his job, you know, really keep these standards up to spec, right? So like the second week I was there, I'd been yelled at every single day. About uniform shit. Now, remember, I've been in the teams for 6 years at that point. 7 years at that point, I've got 3 deployments, 2 platoons, including one to Bosnia, my combat deployment. You know, combat. It's like Cleveland now. We thought it was a big deal back then, but you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to Bosnia. It was a big deal. So anyway, so I'm not like some dude that just rolled off, you know, got out of buds. So finally, I go up to him. I go, "Hey, Master Chief, please. Can I have some type of like matrix or something that will say which boots go with which socks and shorts?" He's like, "God, get the fuck out of here." That did not help at all. Seriously. I just need more back. Like, whatever. I got some lumps at Team 1. And then after that, I was not pleased with our land warfare training at all.
Hmm.
I did, at SEAL Team 4, we did SQ T or STT at the time. So that was like 6 weeks of land warfare. Mm-hmm. Then you went to Team 4 and you did another 6 weeks of land warfare. You deployed to Panama and you lived in the jungle for 5 weeks and you did land warfare for another 5 weeks. So you're just a machine at that point. I mean, you're just, you're on it. It was fantastic. I went to Team 1, we're out in the desert, we're running around, it's hot and sweaty. They yelled at us, we shot some bullets at cactus. I'm like, this is junk. Mm-hmm. Relatively speaking, don't get me wrong, I really do not want to cast disparaging remarks on those guys because they did a fantastic job. Just comparatively speaking, from essentially having 15 weeks in a row of land warfare training to four or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I wasn't happy with it, and I said, I'm going to do something about it. I'm not going to just sit around and bitch about it. I love this community. I love my country. So when they stood up the training detachments, I was the second guy in the land warfare office.
Nice.
Jeff Green was there. He retired as a master chief. Awesome guy. Jeff Green talks like this. Yeah. He used to hold an M16A1, which is the rifle I had in Buds. He would hold it like a pistol with his arm out, one hand, and shoot expert. I'm like, I'm doing whatever this guy tells me.
Green was a monster, too. I mean, he's such a great guy.
He's fantastic. And you know what? Because he's so big and burly, people look at him and they're like, well, this guy's got to be an idiot. But talk to that cat, man. He's very smart. Yeah. So I did that. I said, yeah, I'm not going to just bitch about something. I'm going to do something. So I decided to go there, and I was the LPO for the land warfare and special reconnaissance. Mm-hmm. And then I made chief, and I became the chief for that. Mm-hmm. And went to Team 5, platoon chief job over there. Went up to Iraq, which is a very good experience. Had fantastic dudes. I mean, just fantastic. I had 10 new guys. Mm-hmm. And we went to war with those guys, and they just crushed it. I'm so proud of them. I mean, I get misty thinking about it. They just turned it on. I can't describe how fantastic they were. And then I went to a different team on the West Coast and did some work there for a while. I was asked to come over to commission that one, the support activity. Mm-hmm. I worked there for quite a while and had some very great experiences. And then went from there to Team 7, where I was a troop chief, another great experience there. Went to Afghanistan, actually Iraq and Afghanistan from there, and then over to Germany for 3 years. Not at the unit. I went to the Special Operations Command Europe. Mm-hmm. Sakir worked Sakir. For yep. Neil Guyon was there. He's the DCO. Tom Brown, who made admiral, mm-hmm. he's the DCO, mm-hmm. deputy commanding officer before him. And Mike Repass mm-hmm. was the commanding general. Super dude.
I knew awesome. Repass from when I was in Iraq, he was the JSOTF commander. Good guy.
Yeah, fantastic. You know what? The reason that he didn't make 3 stars is because he was a soldier. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. He was a soldier's general. And that just, at that point in that climate in Europe at that time, remember we were doing the Russian reset and all this other stuff. Foolish decisions. I'm a civilian. I can say whatever the hell I want. Absolutely foolish decisions by the cabal that was in charge, the group of UCOM at that time, following directions of the administration. Mm-hmm. And it got him so frustrated. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't blame him. I think a lot of the things that are taking place, I know there's a lot of things that are taking place in the world that are viewed very negatively that would not be taking place if, no kidding, if that. It's really hard, and you know this as a SEAL, to say a Green Beret dude is pretty awesome. But I'm telling you, if that Green Beret guy had been in charge instead of the Admiral, I think we'd have a much better outcome, at least for the next 5 years. You know, things will wash out.
Right.
And then I went and worked for Steve Wisotsky.
Oh, yeah. Steve's great. Yeah.
Wiz, he's awesome.
He is awesome.
At the Center for SEAL and SWIC in Coronado. And that was good as a transition. It was like a year that I had to retire, and mm-hmm. I got to really do some meaningful things, writing the exams for the enlisted guys and really kind of shaping the community by talking to all of my peers. Mm-hmm. Finding out what's important to them. Should we be focusing more on diving or mm-hmm. parachuting or land warfare, whatever the heck it was? Mm-hmm. And then giving back to the community. It was mm-hmm. nice. I mean, all in all, I can't ask for a better.
Yeah, what an incredible career. Very, That's very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. So let's shift fire and talk about Book of Man.
Book of Man.
How did this come about? Like, where did the seed for this thing pop into your head?
Peachy Dungy, pal.
Such a cool name. It reminds me of The Dangerous Book for Boys. You remember that?
Yes.
Was that an inspiration by any chance?
No. You know what? When I start thinking about something, I try not to read anything in the same genre. I know that that's counter what everybody else does.
No, I'm the same way. I'm afraid of what I'm going to learn.
Right.
Like, wait, there's my idea.
Right. Then you're plagiarizing something.
Right.
95, we were in Pichi Dungi Chili, which is a small town. We were training with some guys, our counterparts. So we had the weekend off. We climbed this little mountain. There's not much to do. It was in the off season. So we packed all the necessities for a weekend hike up this mountain. So we had a bunch of bottles of Chilean wine, which is fantastic. Some MREs, cameras and crap. And I was always our intel rep, so I'm taking pictures of everything. We get up to the top, pass through the cloud layer, and it gets pretty chilly. Mm-hmm. I mean, that country should be called Chile, not Chile. And so the guys are there, and they're like, oh, it's really chilly. And I go, yeah, man, we'll start a fire. I'm going to go take some more pictures. And I come back like 15 minutes later. There's no fire. The guys are all standing there in a circle. And I'm like, what are you doing? And they start looking at their feet. And I had kids at that point, so I know what's going on. You know, they don't
wait, these are SEAL team guys who couldn't.
These are SEALs, dude. And it's so cool. I found the original slide, you know, the old slides.
Uh-huh.
I have the fire in these dudes, those guys, and that was the fire. You know, I'm like, what the hell, man? And they're like, oh, I'm looking at your feet. And I go, holy crap, you guys don't know how to start a fire, do you? And they're like, well, and I'm thinking, they're all city kids. You know what I mean? And when in Buds, did they teach you how to start a fire? There's like, yeah. That is the least tactical thing that you could do. Except for like maybe drive up to Target in a fire truck with the, you know, hey, we're coming to kill you. That'd be bad. Anyway, so the fire is like number two. And so I showed them how to do it. You know, it's moist up there because it's above the cloud line. Just lift the top layer of the leaves and grass off, and then you'll find stuff that is dry enough. And we had matches. So in the book, I don't teach you how to start a fire with flint and, you know, bows and all that crap. I teach you how to start a fire with matches, because if you – go
That's
buy.
A great place to start, by the way.
Yeah, if you buy all the primitive stuff now, it costs like $80, and you're like, seriously, go.
It's also very hard to do. I've started a fire with a bowstring before. It took me three days to figure it out.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, I can make fire with everything though, because I've gone to all these survival courses now. Yeah, but you know, hey, look, man, if you don't have matches and you don't have a lighter, what are you doing? Seriously, if you're planning on going out, anyway, so that was really it. And I started to realize that, wow, guys today do not have the same skills that I really taught myself as a kid growing up with my BB gun walking through the woods.
Right.
And then I just started to pay more and more attention to see these things. And you see guys on the side of the road, they don't know how to change a tire. We had guys in the teams that didn't know how to drive a stick. And you're like, well, how the hell do you know how to drive a stick? Now, driving a stick is not in the book, but changing a tire is.
Right.
So I think it was important for me to write these things down. You know, what have we forgotten? 50 years ago, if your grandpa had said, let's say you're both alive then, hey, let's go fishing. You'd go, okay, great. I need a fishing pole. I need a lure, or I need hooks. And then once you get the stuff, you have to get the worm on the hook and figure out where to fish. And you wouldn't have some like big brief. You wouldn't have to get on YouTube and all that crap. You just go do it because you know how to do it, right?
Right.
Ask some guy that today. Ask a dude how to sight in a gun. He's either going to be horrified of weapons because they are the harbinger of disaster, which, mm-hmm. you know, is silly. They're tools. Mm-hmm. Or the dude has, you know, he wears camouflage PJs to bed. He's got a little inflatable M16. He's, you know, I love my gun. So we're on one side or the other. You either know everything about guns or you know nothing about guns
right.
in our country today. And I just explain stuff like that. What's the difference between a shotgun shell and a 9mm round?
Right.
Things that we've forgotten. And the cool part is that I have a lot of friends, and I think really the coolest friends in the entire world. And I asked them to write different sections of it.
Oh, cool.
So my brother, who taught me how to change a tire, writes how to change a tire. A guy named Mitch Gerns, who is the illustrator for The Punisher, like for Marvel Comics Punisher.
Oh, cool.
He writes how to make cocktails, because let's be honest. Life isn't about a series of checklists that you have to do. It's understanding. Being a man is understanding how to do things, understanding how they work and they're doing them. But so there's a lot of fancy stuff involved. My friend Donnie Rugg is a haberdasher, an actual haberdasher, teaches you how to tie a tie.
What is a haberdasher?
A haberdasher is a man that outfits other men with clothing.
Interesting.
Yeah, like a coutier.
I should have known that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've ever used a haberdasher before.
The book's at Walmart, pal. Turn the computer off, get up, and walk that way.
I'm going to get one.
Right now. But, yeah, and then John Sheck, who's an actor, fantastic actor. He teaches how to kiss a girl. I mean, in the end,
right,
we, you know, I identify, self-identify as a heterosexual male. So prior to being married, that's what I was looking for, was a mate, which would be a girl. Yeah. And then the "and" is my favorite part. It's called Campfire Stories. And that's a collection of these cool stories of these dudes that I know. And they just kind of lay out some things that have happened to them in their life, or things to think about, and then I wrap them up. So the first one's a guy named Hank Paul. Fantastic dude. He's 90-year-old-ish guy, Jewish dude from New York. Married Dorothy, gets drafted, Korean War, and they're like, okay, you're going to Korea, and you guys go that way. And they're like, go that way? And they're like, yeah. Wind up in Nevada, and he was one of the guys that was in the trenches when they blew off the nuclear weapons. Boom! And they're like, get out of the trench and walk into the... Have you ever seen those videos?
No.
They're insane. So there's soldiers and Marines. They put them in these trenches. They clacked off tactical nuclear weapons. They had them get up and then walk into the blast.
What?
To prove that you could do it. Yeah. Now Google that stuff. It's crazy. But he was one of those guys. Gets out of the
army.
He
survived, obviously.
Yeah, he's fine. He's 90 now. Gets out of the army, doesn't bitch. And he tells this story. It's this wonderful way that he tells the story. I wasn't going to go against the government. I wanted to do this. I grew up in the Bronx. You know, four of the guys on the block got killed. And I figured that it was my duty. And he went and did his duty, gets out of the army, starts a production company in Hollywood. Cool. Matt Height, who's another retired SEAL senior chief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Matt.
Okay. So he tells this thing about legacy. And it's fascinating. He said, if you're a young man, because you're talking about young men, I believe, on this program. Mm-hmm. If you're a young man and you took a moment just to think about what your unborn children would think of your actions, how would that change your behavior today? Mm-hmm. And if you, I mean, that's real deep thoughts with Matt. He's a super guy. Because how many times have you done something just, I was going to edit that one out. Hey, something crazy. You do something foolish. Because you don't think about, you know, what's going to happen in 5 years. What happens if you think about 30 years in advance? Yeah. And then there's Dave Bell, another friend of mine, taking a risk versus calculated risk versus gambling. Very important distinction. Mm-hmm. SEALs have mastered that, by the way. Mm-hmm. And then John Voight, who's another friend of mine, he's an actor. He writes a story about him when he was a young man in the 60s, did Army Reserves, did not go to Vietnam. He didn't want to go to Vietnam. He wanted to be an actor. Then he fell in with the, you know, screw America crowd. Mm-hmm. America's bad crowd. You know, Jane Fonda and all that stuff. He was doing that. And the gig was that they said, hey, look, once America leaves Vietnam, it's going to be peace, love, and understanding. North and South will reunite, and it's going to be a better world. And then you're like, yeah, great. Well, we left, and like 1.2 million Vietnamese were killed with Laotians and Cambodians. And John, at that point, was like, I have been lied to, and I have been a fool. So he has been working since, 1975 was the fall of Saigon. He's been working since then to make amends for his foolish decisions as a young man. And he lays this story out. It's fantastic, man.
Wow, that's
The moral of that story is we hardly ever do what is right when it's right, like at the right time. But it is never too late to try to do what's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, human timing is really rarely good. Mm-hmm. But our intentions can be pure as long as we do what we say we're going to do. Full circle. How about that?
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, geez, my mind is full, and I can't wait to read the book, and I wish I had a chance to take a look at it before this, because then we could talk more about the stories. But where do you go from here? I mean, you just go back and farm, or are you planning on writing a sequel, or, you know, what's inspiring you right now?
Well, right now we're just kind of dealing with the book. So I just recorded the audio book up in Hollywood. That should be, I would say, another week or two till it comes out, and then it'll come out digitally. Mm-hmm. So we're just kind of chasing that around, and I'm really enjoying just being around my family.
Yeah, right.
I never understood. Now, I think they're lying. They're like, I'm retiring from politics to, you know, spend more time with my family. That's because they got busted banging a page in the coat room of the Senate, okay? That didn't happen to me. I'm actually enjoying spending time with my family. So, yeah, we had our first granddaughter, and it is wonderful to have the freedom to be able to move around and do stuff. You know, I don't feel a lot of pressure to to get crazy with stuff. But I've been doing some television things, and I'll do another movie coming up probably in October or November. Mm-hmm. It's just fun. It's being able to be the captain of my own ship.
Nice.
Is cool. And the farm is just the deal, man. You sit out in that thing. It gets, 40 degrees below zero because it's 45 minutes south of Lake Superior. I mean, it isn't next stop Canada, Wisconsin.
So do you actually have farm animals on this farm? Or?
No, we don't until next year when we move there full time. So I have just 80 acres, so it's not like some huge plantation. And about 70 of that, it's tillable. Mm-hmm. So we just do hay right now, which is good. But apparently you have to be with animals frequently or they die. I mean, who knew?
Who knew that?
No book for that. But
baling hay, that's another one. There's a, I used to bale hay when I was a kid at a friend's farm.
Really?
What a great experience that was, man.
It's work, dude.
It's hard work.
Farming is work.
Yeah.
And have you seen this thing? It's called Euro Dreams of Sushi. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's this fantastic documentary about this Japanese sushi chef named Euro. He's got a 3-star Michelin restaurant in the Tokyo subway. President Obama went there. But this dude has this quote. He says, look, you don't have to be proud of your job, but you have to be proud of your work.
Yes.
Yeah. And when I saw that, I stopped that thing. I kid you not. I called my son. He's at Marquette. He was a sophomore then. I called him and said, Kurt, I was calling my brother's name. Hey, Ted, I want you to get on Netflix right now. Pull this thing up. Euro Dreams of Sushi. Go to like 27 minutes and 13 seconds. I forget what it was. I want you to watch that and listen to this old man because he knows exactly what he's talking about. And then I walked in the other room and did the same thing with my other son, Danny.
That's cool.
Yeah. If we take that away, the pride in something other than ourselves, not to the point of we're these trippy Buddhist monks sitting in a big ball of spaghetti together, but if we understand the fact that we're looking at ourselves and seek a higher goal, purpose, exactly the same thing that you've been teaching us for how many years you've been doing this, but if you actually do it, understand that I'm walking this road right now, and it could just be in the middle of a conversation. I understand I'm turning this towards myself right now, and I need to stop and focus on the other person right now.
Right.
If they do that, their lives become so much more rich. And I don't mean rich like money crap. I mean, like you actually have a sense of personal wealth. Right. You know what I mean? That sure transcends money. We are not made of money. Money is something that we use.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. Anyway,
awesome
philosophical points with the old senior chief.
We'll have to come back to that. Actually, I like that. So let's talk philosophy on another podcast. That sounds really fun.
Yeah, I would love to.
Great look. Great luck with the book. People can find it at Amazon and places like that, I imagine.
Right now, at Walmart and Walmart.com.
Okay, Walmart.com.
It will be. It's being hawked on Amazon now, but it'll be the public on Amazon. It will resume this month. And then the audiobook will be out along with the digital Kindle version. So.
Awesome. So
right on.
Thank you very much, Derek. It's been quite a pleasure and an honor to hang out with you and to get to know you a little bit better. And I'm sure our folks will really enjoy the podcast. Let's do it again. Let's stay in touch. And if you ever get to San Diego, look me up and I'll do the same. I'd love to come out and spend some 40 degree below zero time with you out in Wisconsin.
Hey, bring it, dude. I'm telling you, that's man camp for real.
That is man camp.
Yeah, you've got that place in Coronado, right?
Encinitas. Encinitas is 30 minutes north of Coronado. Oh, the CBC. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you broke up. Coronado Brewing Company, I'm not involved in anymore. I sold my interest to my partners.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
Yeah, I just bailed on that.
I did not realize that.
I thought free beer for life was a good idea, but it came with some, baggage.
Yeah, like an extra 60 pounds, bloodshot eyes, and a divorce.
Yeah, something like that. All right, buddy. It's great talking to you. Thank you very much. Stay in touch, and good luck. So, everybody, this is Commander Divine saying goodbye. Thanks for your time. Go check out Derek's book, The Book of Man. I can't wait to read this myself. And, Derek, we'll see you again sometime soon.
Right on. Cheers.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Take care.
You got it. Good luck. Make sure you get home, boys. They got your back, the pride of the fleets, the bright swinging frogmen of the UTT.
This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree